This is 91.7 WVXU's Cincinnati Edition. I'm Jay Hanselman. In 2 weeks, Cincinnati Mayor John Cranley will have been in office for 5 months, and a lot has happened in that short period of time. Mayor Cranley joins me in the studio to talk about his term so far and what's yet to come. We are taping this segment of the program, so we're not able to include your calls and emails. Mayor Cranley, thanks for being here.
It's great to be here.
We've got a lot to talk about, but it seems like, to me, as somebody who's been at City Hall a lot covering different things, that probably the most significant thing that's happened in that 5 months has to deal with the pension system.
Yeah, I agree with you.
And essentially, you have turned that over, for lack of a better word, to a federal court to work out a solution. How did that process start? Did some of the folks who had filed that lawsuit in federal court contact you? Did you contact them? Just walk us through how we ended up in a federal mediation.
I would love to. And I think it's important for listeners to understand the scope of the problem also, if I could take a minute on that. So just to understand, we're the only city in Ohio that has its own pension. So, you know, everyone knows that the whole Midwest has lost industrial jobs, manufacturing jobs, have all kinds of financial problems. But Cleveland, Columbus, Indianapolis, Lexington, Louisville, our competitors don't have a pension. Their employees may be part of their state pension system, but they're not a city pension. That is a significant problem for us because our bond rating, our credit rating, our national reputation depends on our credit. And we have this liability that other cities don't have. So it is while we have enormous advantages over those other cities that I mentioned because we have P&G and Macy's and Kroger's and Cintas and Dunnhumby, and it looks like we're going to have a good shot of getting these new GE jobs, et cetera, and I think we have more momentum, and let's face it, we just have a better city. We do have this extra problem that they don't have to deal with. So it's a huge problem, and you know, not to play, you know, Cassandra here, but you know, Detroit had to declare bankruptcy. San Diego was basically bankrupt by its pension obligations. So certain cities around the country, for historical reasons, have pensions, and we're in many ways unlucky in that regard, that historically we have our own pension, so we have this problem now. So I just want to underscore, first of all, that this is a unique problem that we have to deal with. A second problem is that there are two factors that are driving our problem financially. One is, like Social Security, like Medicare, people are living longer, and the system was designed when people didn't live as long. So naturally, that creates a tension between not having enough payers into the system to pay the beneficiaries. So that has to give, unfortunately. And that would have been true no matter what happened. But the second major problem is the Great Recession of 2008-09, we lost $1 billion in value in our system basically overnight. And the way a pension-defined benefit program works is you have to pay the benefits regardless. Whereas, you know, if you have a 401k and Jay Hanselman 401k takes a $100,000 hit in 2008-09, you just have less money. You just have less money. That's your problem. Where here, the benefits are promised regardless of how the pension performs on the stock market, which is a fundamental flaw with the system, which can't easily be fixed. So these two are sort of a double whammy that hit us. And then on top of that, my predecessors in the late 90s bestowed some very generous, insanely generous benefits that are, you know, way outside the norm. For example, they have in the late 90s, when they thought the pension was going to have surpluses as far as the eye could see, they actually increased benefits when the benefits were already very nice. So they, for example, they moved the cost of living increase from a simple simple interest increase to a compound interest. I mean, most people get no cost of living increase and don't even have a pension, and this was moving it from a simple interest adjustment on an annual basis for cost of living to a compound interest.
Or those COLAs are tied to some index.
Exactly. So these are you know, huge problems. And as I've said many times, as a region, our only Achilles heel is the airport and lack of flights, and that really hurts our ability to bring businesses into the city. Our city's only Achilles heel is the pension. So this is a very long-winded answer to your initial statement that I agree with you that the biggest thing we've tackled since I've been elected is the pension, and it's frankly the biggest threat that we were facing for all the reasons I've mentioned. So then to talk through how we came to the solution that we came to. there were sort of three major issues, three buckets that really are driving the pension. There's the math, which I've kind of just walked through, where you've got people living longer, the loss of money on the stock market, the compound COLA versus a simple interest COLA, things of that nature. And the math has always been relatively straightforward. We know that if we can get adjustments back to a simple COLA, maybe take a couple year holiday on the COLAs, if we can match the healthcare benefits for current retirees to the ones that actives are going to end up getting, we take more advantage of Medicare, that we can right the ship mathematically, okay? It's just math. And you got to change. We need a shared sacrifice solution to fix the problem. Well, then the next bucket is political. Well, the math is easy on paper, but cutting people's health care benefits is very difficult politically, and understandably so. People, city employees work for the city, and they were told that they were going to get certain benefits. And if it wasn't for the Great Recession and some other issues, there would be no problem. Unfortunately, there is a problem. And I want to make this point because I think it's worth making, that it's not the fault of the retirees that were in this mess. Frankly, I think the Wall Street bankers who got us in a subprime mortgage bomb, explosion that then collapsed the entire world economy are more to blame than anybody else. And unfortunately, we have to clean up the mess. And cleaning up the mess means that we have to suffer because of mistakes that were made on Wall Street. So it is unfair, but it's even more unfair to bankrupt the city. So, you know, we're dealing with lesser of two evils. But I do want to point out that it's not – none of us are excited or take relish in the fact that we're going to have to cut benefits in order to get through this crisis. So the politics, though, are very tough because the math is clear. We got to change benefits. The politics are a lot tougher.
And that's largely because there are a lot of retirees who live in the city.
Yes.
Who vote for council and the mayor.
Absolutely. And because they were told they were going to get benefits, and now they feel like they're being the bait and switch on the benefits. And I understand their feelings, and we're just trying to find as the least painful solution to get through this. But then the third bucket, which I think was ignored previously, and I'm proud to say I've spent probably the most amount of time working on, is a legal solution. So let's assume we know the math fix. And let's just assume, and which of course we did, get the votes out of council to fix the math. What happens if we get sued and those benefit cuts are overturned in court? Then we're even worse shaped than we were to begin with because we've spent the political capital to make tough cuts, and then it gets undone by a judge. That's the worst of all worlds because then we've spent all of our political capital, we haven't fixed the math, and now we're in worse shape, and our bond rating and our credit rating and our national reputation will really sink. So what I was focused on from day one, and I've spent more time on this than probably any other issue, is thinking through a legal strategy that whatever mathematical and political solution we can get through will stick. Okay, and so really, it's a long, complicated legal analysis, but the short explanation is that we have set this thing up so that Judge Barrett, the federal judge, can certify a mandatory class action that will apply the changes that we agree to all parties, including current retirees. Okay? And that's critically important. Now, the only description that I would take a little note on and sort of give more credit to city council than I think than they're getting is that we're not – it is true that Judge Barrett is now in a position to help solve this problem, and he has been a hero in this story because he's really stepped up to the plate to help us. And it was many his idea to use his courtroom as a way to solve this, similar to the collaborative agreement we did 12 years ago when it police community relations. But it's true that council voted 9-0 to cut the benefits in a way that would fix the math. So they didn't shirk their responsibilities. They didn't just sort of say, Judge, you make the tough decisions on the benefit cuts. They did vote to cut the compound COLA back to simple interest COLA. They did vote to put a freeze on all COLAs for several years. They did vote to take $100 million out of the medical fund, which is separately funded, to use it to buy down the liability of the pension obligations. All of those have negative impacts on beneficiaries. And so city council voted to do those things, and I applaud them for doing that. It was courageous, and it was not clear that they would do that, and they showed the political courage to do so, and I think council deserves a lot of credit. So the framework is there. Now, will some of those benefits change maybe to the benefit of beneficiaries? Well, that's what we're negotiating and mediating in court. We don't expect to get everything we've asked for. But the fact is that we not only asked the judge to help us find a solution, we weren't doing that to avoid the politics of making tough cuts. We were doing it to ensure that the cuts that we've agreed that we have to make can stick legally. And so I'm proud that I spent as much time thinking through the legal strategy as much as the political and mathematical strategies, because in the end, we need a binding solution that will endure, and we can get this off the front page and move on to other issues in the city.
And that framework would include council also agreeing to whatever term this agreement is, you know, 20 years, 30 years, that you're going to be locked into an annual required contribution to the system, where now that is a little bit flexible.
Right. Right now it's routinely and has been for about 7 years ignored. And by making a judicial decision, you know, it will no longer be voluntary for council to ignore its annual retired contribution, because it will be judicially enforceable contempt of court.
In years past, whenever there's been any talk about changing retiree benefits, the council chamber has been full of retirees. And this time, I think the day of the public hearing in Budget and Finance, right, there was one public speaker. When council approved this, maybe three or four.
Right.
Do you think the little reaction from the retirees, are they maybe looking at Detroit saying, you know, we'd be better off to try to work out something for us to be at the table rather than a court to enforce something on us that, you know, we may end up like Detroit, where, you know, we're really giving up a lot?
You know, it's a great question. And frankly, I want to thank the retirees. I mean, the retirees did, as you point out, recognize that we have a big problem, and they wanted to be in the mediation, in the negotiation. And they were worried that at some level, selfishly, they were worried that a solution would be imposed on them. But they could have put up a much bigger fight than they did. And in fact, they thought that the collaborative approach was the right approach, not just for their own benefits, but they were looking at the big picture and what's good for the city. And they also came up to the plate in a huge way that has been helpful to this process. And I will say this, though, that we assume going into this strategy that they would be a huge opposition. And one of the things that I believe strongly in is just talking to people. And so we invited them into the mayor's office, and we were prepared for a very ugly meeting where we said, we're going to go down this road and we'll hope you go with us. But we were expecting, you know, major opposition. And their reaction was, we appreciate the fact that you're telling us before you do this. And I think there were obviously other external factors like Detroit that probably played into the thinking. But the fact is that I can't tell you how much mileage we got out of the fact that we just told them what we were going to do, and we didn't surprise them, and we asked them for their help. And you'd be amazed what people are willing to do if you just tell them the truth and say, look, we don't want to do this, but here's why we're doing it, and here's, you know, and we were honest, you know, we were kind of playing our hand, and we're saying, look, the reason we want to go down this road is that we're worried that if we just cut your benefits and we don't do it in a judicial setting, that you'll sue and maybe win. And that doesn't do us any good. And so this is why we're going down the road we're going. And I think they appreciated the honesty.
This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. We're talking with Cincinnati Mayor John Cranley. We are taping this portion of the program, so we're not able to include your calls and emails. That pension mediation also played a role in a meeting in the end of March with the bond rating agencies. And a couple of things that they were concerned about was one of them, number one probably, was the pension issue. Did that process, passing the mediation plan, did that help the bond process go much better than you expected? Because I thought I was getting the sense that even with the pension fix, you were expecting you know, a significant downgrade in the city's bond rating.
Oh, it helped big time. You know, I was in the credit rating agency presentations, and, you know, I always get the two confused. But the one, both of them cited the pension plan as reasons why they didn't further downgrade our debt. And in fact, I think it was S&P said that they would – I could be wrong about this. I always forget which one's which. But one of them said that they intend to upgrade our credit if we get the judicial solution that we proposed. And they specifically said because we think that they're getting their financial house in order by addressing as opposed – remember what's happened for 10 years was passing the buck on the pension. And one of my big strategies when I got elected was I want to tackle all the toughest issues first and get rid of all the headaches so we can have a lot of fun for the next 3.5 years. And the pension was without question the biggest headache. So they specifically said it's refreshing to see that the leadership is going to tackle these tough issues.
The one bond rating agency, and again, I get them confused like you do. I know it kept it at AAA plus right. or AA plus.
Right.
Another one dropped it, I believe, to AA minus.
Right.
Monetarily, you don't know yet, though, how much that's right. going to cost you to borrow money. Although I guess there's a bond sale coming up, but you really don't know the money part of that
right.
just yet.
That we don't expect a price differential on one notch. You know, the big fear was if we got down to triple B status, which is close to junk bond status, that would have a major problem for us. And candidly, the cost and the interest rate is significant and real that you pay a higher price if you have lower ratings. But bigger picture is not the, you know, because you might – instead of paying 4% interest on a 30-year bond, we might pay 4.25%. You know, that's not a lot of money. I mean, it is a lot of money, but it's not going to make or break the city. But the bigger issue is the qualitative impact, not the quantitative, but the qualitative impact to our national reputation. You know, as GE and other companies that we're trying to lure to Cincinnati are looking at us, they are looking at our credit rating. And if they don't believe we have our financial house in order, that's a huge knock against us in terms of job location. So while it is a real quantitative difference, the bigger difference is the reputational risk of losing our credit rating.
For the bond rating pension issue was one thing. The other thing was the structurally balanced budget. Council's beginning to talk about the budget. The interim city manager Stiles is supposed to present a budget to you on May the 8th. Council member Winburn, who chairs Budget and Finance, just seems to think that a structurally balanced budget, I don't want to oversimplify, but he thinks it's going to be easy. Do you agree with that?
Well, I don't believe it's easy, but I believe that we will do it because I think we have a clear majority on council that's committed to getting our financial house in order. And so there will be tough choices to be made, but I am deeply involved in this, and I believe we will have – I know we will present a structurally balanced budget to council. And I'm hoping that they'll pass a structurally balanced budget. I can at least promise you that the budget they receive is going to be structurally balanced.
And you have pledged that that will not include layoffs in the police department, actually going to be adding police officers.
Right.
Same thing for the fire department.
Right.
Where's the pain going to be, though? If you're going to cut – I mean the budget director says the deficit's $21.1 million.
Right.
There's going to have to be some pain someplace.
Well, that's right. There's no free money. So – let me emphasize your first point. For the last 5 years, there's been a major reprioritization that against what I would call basic services, police, fire, and public services. And I think it's equally important to talk about the litter pickup, the pothole fix, the road pavement fixes, the garbage collection. You know, these are the things people expect. And so we're not going to we're going to reinvest in those areas because we think we can be doing a better job by prioritizing on the things that citizens care about, which includes, among other things, adding more officers to the street. But obviously something else has got to give, and we are going to be looking at a variety of solutions, including, candidly, some different fees. We may be looking at fees. So it'll be a balanced solution that's not all cuts.
And with the additional police officers, actually, there's some new police officers going to be starting sooner than a new recruit class because of some police officers with prior experience that are about to begin training with the police department right now.
Right. Yeah, we got 23 new officers coming on this summer with lateral transfers, and that's great. That'll be a huge shot in the arm for the police department and for communities that are really worried about open-air drug deals and the homicides, which are far too high.
Clearly, during the campaign, you talked a lot about the streetcar and your opposition to it. And I think on December 2nd, you were steadfast that, you know, you were going to put a halt to the project, and you did that with a series of ordinances that week.
Yeah.
At that point, did you ever think that on December the 19th, you would be in front of the media saying that Cincinnati is going to have a streetcar project?
I don't know. I mean, I did think we would stop the streetcar. So, you know, I mean, I guess the short answer is I didn't expect it to turn out the way it did, and I wish it hadn't turned out the way it did. But, you know, we live in a checks and balances country and city, and I believe more in the American way than I do in getting my way. So, you know, if I had been able to veto it, I would have. But six members of council voted to keep the project going, which was at odds with what at least half of those council members told the public in the election. And for whatever reason, they changed their mind. And I'm sure they all believe, and I'm sure it's true that they believe they did what was in the best interest of their conscience. I saw it a different way. I thought that we would save money long term, big time, by stopping it. But council had its say; they had the votes to overturn my veto, and so I felt that, you know, the only consolation was that we got Kevin Flynn helped get $9 million in private funding, which does reduce the cost somewhat. In my opinion, not nearly enough, but it's better than nothing. So it does bring $9 million in private dollars into the project. Previously, the previous administration had promised over and over again that there'd be private funding, but they essentially got none. And when you use, you know, real – and when you – I think when you get serious about things, you'll be amazed at the private impact that you can extract. And we were able to extract $9 million into the system, which makes the project at least $9 million better than it had been. And we also, I think – in my opinion, closed the chapter. You know, we needed to have finality on the project one way or the other. And while it's not the way I would have liked it, at least we've been able to move on to other issues.
With that project, though, there's going to be talk about, you know, taking it to the uptown area, expanding it to other areas. Are you going to be adamantly opposed to those efforts to expand it, to just keep it, you know, where it is and downtown and over the Rhine as a loop right
now? I ran on a set of priorities of taking care of neighborhoods, balancing the budget. The streetcar is a major drain on the city's finances, major. And I understand that the first phase is going forward, and I'm not going to stop that. But I am not going to support robbing additional dollars from, you know, neighborhoods and the city to pursue a project that has yet to be proven to be successful. I think the first phase needs to be on time and under budget, and people need to ride it. And if they do, and given the amount of money that we're putting into it, I certainly hope that they do. I hope that it's a success. And if it's a success, then we can have a conversation, in my opinion. Well, we can always have a conversation. I've learned the hard way not to say anything about that. But we can always have a conversation. But from my point of view, we can talk about the future phases once the first phase has been proven a success. And if it isn't, we should save the money and not spend money on a future phase if phase one doesn't work.
This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Again, talking to Cincinnati Mayor John Cranley, and we are taping this portion of the program. Another thing that you'll have coming up is the mayor gets to select the city manager, and you've hired a search firm to conduct the manager search. Where are you in that process? Have they set a deadline for folks to submit their applications, and then when does the actual screening of candidates start?
Well, the advertisement should be hit the streets on Monday. And that'll be, I don't know, a couple 2 to 3 week period when we collect, you know, potential candidates who apply. And then we'll have interview processes, I would guess, beginning in mid, late May and all the way through early June.
And your goal is still to have somebody by July 1st?
That's the goal. You know, I think we can get an extension if we need to. You know, it's important to get the decision right than to hit an arbitrary deadline. But yes, our goal is very much, and we're working very hard to get a decision by July 1.
What are you looking for in a manager?
I think mainly is operations. You know, we need someone, you know, right now we have a lot of construction downtown, and which is a good thing. Like Dunhumby's under construction. That's new jobs. We'll hopefully have new construction with GE. We also have a lot of construction related to the streetcar. So right now, getting around downtown is very, very difficult, and it's a real burden. And I worry that we'll lose jobs if people get too frustrated with being able to get around downtown. We can get through this. Construction's a sign of progress, but we can do a better job of moving the traffic along. We need, and I want, a transportation department and a city manager who's going to be focused on it, thinking every single day, how do I improve the citizen experience? So how do I move the traffic better? How do I inspire my workforce to go out there and think about the reaction that citizens have to the interaction they have with the city, whether it's a pothole, whether it's traffic, whether it's the police, whether it's fire, whether it's economic development, whether it's the cleanliness of the city? What I want is a manager who's inspired to inspire the city workforce to provide a good citizen experience and good value for the tax dollars. So I really want someone who is going to wake up every day and say, how am I going to make this city better for citizens today?
We've referenced it a couple of times, the GE jobs, and you have said that it would be great downtown, you just want them in the city. Is that a game changer for the city, those additional jobs?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's 2,000 jobs over 10 years, major company, another major footprint in the city. It just shows you how much momentum and excitement the city has. I mean, downtown and over the Rhine are just hopping. I mean, we have incredible mojo, momentum, whatever you want to call it. You know, Cincinnati, in my opinion, is already the most exciting urban space. And if you look at it from a per cost per capita, obviously other cities like New York or San Francisco or wherever, Denver, are very, very cool cities. But they're way more expensive, and they're not as concentrated as our downtown and urban space are. So I think for the money, we have the most exciting urban space in America, and bringing another 2,000 jobs is only going to turbocharge that.
One of the other things you've been trying to do since you've been in office is do something to make sure that minorities and women-owned businesses receive more city contracts. Talk about what you've done so far and what's yet to come.
Well, we have adopted the policy to use the project approach that was used on the casino, which was very successful in getting minority and women-owned and Hispanic and African-American businesses into the construction process as a role model for all city projects moving forward, number one. Number two is we also have hired Janet Reed, who is a consultant who used to be at P&G and used to be the president of the Chamber of Commerce, the president of the board or chairman of the board, whatever the title is. And she's doing a deep dive into our procurement policies, and we're benchmarking other cities like Atlanta and Cleveland who have done a better job at this than we have to improve our procurement policies to make sure that the tax dollars that are raised from a diverse population are benefiting a diverse population. So we are very aggressively pursuing this, and we expect to have a report in the fall that we can use to improve our outcomes.
You and the police chief were in New York City, I think, 2 weeks ago,
right,
at the invitation of the Department of Justice to talk,
right,
about the city's collaborative process. But you also said that while you were there, you wanted to learn from, you know, a big city mayor like New York City about addressing homicides. Did you take anything away from that trip that you can use here in Cincinnati?
I did, although it wasn't what I expected. You know, the fact is that when we had, you know, one of the things in addition to hiring more cops is we reinvested in SERVE, which is Citizens Initiative to Reduce Violence. And this initiative that we started 7 or so years ago, the call-ins, where you reach out to the worst of the worst. And we adopted this process that David Kennedy and others had implemented in other cities, where instead of just doing a blanket sweep, where sometimes you cause more problems than you solve because you're just harassing people and you're not really going after the hardened criminals, to really identify the hardened criminals and have a strategic effort to go after them. And then you have these call-ins where you bring in these teenagers and others who are heading down the wrong road, and you give them sort of their last warning, and we say, we know who you are, we're looking at you, and we're going after you. When we were doing that in full steam, where we had the officers, we had more officers, we had a fully invested in SERVE and partnership effort with the community, we saw a dramatic reduction in homicides. About two and a half years ago, they just kind of stopped doing all that stuff, and we've seen this huge increase in homicides. So what I learned in New York is that Cincinnati's collaborative SERVE approach is really the role model now, not only for the country and for the Department of Justice, but for New York. And New York is going through civil rights issues that we were going through 12 years ago now, and they are they're looking to adopt our approach. And so it really was an opportunity for Cincinnati to shine in a room. We had the chief of police of Chicago. We had the chief of police of New York, or at least Commissioner Bill Bratton. And they weren't necessarily citing Cincinnati, but they were saying we want to go in the direction that Cincinnati has already gone. Now, the head of the Department of Justice guy that was there for the COPS program, he said that Cincinnati has really tackled this in a way that other cities haven't. So we really shined in that room. Now, the problem we have right now, which we're trying to address, is that we have stopped investing in what worked. What worked were the call-ins, what worked was serve, and what worked was having more cops than we currently do. So we're trying as fast as we can to put those cops back on the street, to reinvest in serve, to reinvest in working with the ministers and others who have really made a big difference.
As our time begins to run out, we know the structurally balanced budget is probably the next big item on the agenda. Yeah. What's the – after the budget, what's the next big thing that we should watch for?
The next big thing will be the city manager. The two – you know, as I say, there are seven big things that we had to tackle that were kind of hangover issues that we had to deal with right away. Streetcar, parking, pension, police, fire, because, you know, we not only got more cops, but we're also getting more firefighters, the budget, and the city manager. And so we're trying to have some resolution on all seven of those by July 1.
So seven.
So five of the seven have already been put in place.
In 5 months.
Yeah. So, and then we got two more big ones. Now, we got other things we always deal with, like trying to get GE and things of that nature. Upcoming events, the two big ones are going to be the budget and city manager.
I've been talking with Cincinnati Mayor John Cranley about his time at City Hall so far, what's been accomplished and still to come. He took office on December 1st, and in 2 weeks he'll have been on the job for 5 months. Mayor Cranley, thanks for joining us.
It's great to be here.
Thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Archives of our programs are available on our website, WVXU.org. Producer for today's program was Pete Reitmeier. Our technical directors were Kevin Rowinski and Rick Andres. I'm Jay Hanselman.